close call with death. Have you had one? I have. I've had a lot of them, but who's counting? In this podcast, we'll talk about the events of those of us that have come dangerously close to death and had the great luck or destiny to elude death and carry on. Enjoy the show. Today as my guest, I have Christian Deputy, and I go way back years of knowing Christian and worked with him years ago. And he had a major accident, a mountain biking accident. And over all these years, he went through a lot in his life of going through the incident, being hospitalized, being completely paralyzed from the neck down, and had quite the process of working his way back. And I was just thinking the other day that Christian would be ideal for this podcast of A Close Call with Death. It truly was a close call, and we're going to get into that today and talk to Christian about his family, what happened in that day leading up to the accident, what went down that day, and what has happened to him since then in recuperation and getting back into life and living the rest of his life. So, Christian, welcome to the show. Let's talk about this. So, seriously, thanks so much for being here with me today and having you in my seat. I really look forward to this conversation with you about your accident. So first of all, though, it's been years since you and I have had a chance to kind of sit down and catch up and stuff. So tell me about your family situation. What's going on with the deputy family?
Yeah, no, it has been a long time. We used to work together, and yeah, crazy how, I don't know how long it's been, probably 15 plus years.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. About 15 years.
And catch up. Yeah, I'm my wife, who you know, Jody, who works in HR, and you've gotten to know, and we've been married for a little over about 8 years now, and we have young kids. We're old enough to have teenagers, but we have young 4.5-year-old twins.
Twins? Yeah. Are they two boy, two girls, or a boy and a girl?
We've got girls, Adele and Sophia.
That's so
they're
great.
Fraternal twins and very different, but they're keeping us on our toes, and that seems to be where we spend a lot of our time right now.
Did you guys think that you were going to have twins? Did you have it in your family, her family?
No, we you know, Jody and I were both a little older. Because of my accident, we were a little older when we started to have kids. So we went through a round of IVF, or actually various rounds of IVF, and knew there was a pretty high possibility of having twins, and we did, and it's great. Twins are awesome.
Oh my gosh, are they ever? Yes, children, period, are amazing, and then wait till you have grandkids like we have. They're super cool.
We're looking forward to that. We got a few years till we get to that
stage. Yes, you do.
But we're having fun with the ones we've got.
That's
right
so
now.
That's so cool, Christian. I'm happy for you. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, other than that, oh, we're building a home. So that's probably got us, it seems like raising kids and building a home and work is what we spend most of our time doing right now.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that it's like that first half of the game, you know, you just go fast forward and do so many things with college and graduation and work and marriage and kids and everything. And then all of a sudden you just start to plateau a little bit and get comfortable when the kids get a little bit older, and there's so much ahead of you. And thank goodness you're here today with me. You know, just in reflection of looking back at your accident, that you're here and actually alive and have a cute little family like that and building your home. Where are you building?
We're building in Midway, Utah. So small town, Midway, Utah. We're moving from Salt Lake City and decided to make a change and raise our kids up in Midway.
So and, you know, change. So for people that aren't from Utah and aren't familiar with our state, where is that in proximity to like Park City? Or
yeah, it's close to Park City. It's on Salt Lake's on the front side of the Wasatch Range. And then on the back side of the Wasatch Range, you have Park City. And then just down the road from Park City is Midway. So it's just right behind Deer Valley. So if you're a skier, you can kind of, from where we live, you look one direction up to Deer Valley and one direction up to the backside of Snowbird.
So that's fantastic.
Beautiful valley and a gorgeous place to call home.
But when you get your house done and everything and settled, then let me know and we'll come over. We'll bring you a housewarming gift.
We'll have a barbecue, Bob.
I would love that. Great. Yeah. Hey, so you know, catch me up on this accident. You know, I want to know the full details of that. I remember back when it went down and I was absolutely shocked and just grateful that you were alive, shocked that it happened to you. And that has been a heck of a ride. Take us back to the day that it happened and what went down that day.
Yeah, I got injured on August 26th of 2010. So I'm coming up on 11 years. And it was end of the mountain biking season. So I was anxious to get in a number of rides before the days got much shorter, and reached out to a friend of mine, Matt Hoffman, who he and I ride quite often, and just recommended kind of midday, we started coordinating and say, yeah, let's go up and do a ride. I was in Deer Valley yesterday and did a ride, and it's fabulous. Why don't we get up? And there's a really popular trail that a lot of folks ride in Utah called the Crest Trail.
Yes.
And we decided to ride the Crest Trail that day. And it's a great ride to do when you can shuttle, because it makes for a great one-way trip. So we parked one car down at the bottom of the Mill D trail, which is in Big Cottonwood Canyon, where Brighton and Solitude are. And we took another car up the road where we would start the ride.
And the whole distance of that trail is how far?
That's a good question. It's not that far of a ride. I'm guessing it's about a 15-mile ride, 18-mile ride. Takes, you can ride it in about 90 minutes to 2 hours. And it runs along Park City. You've got views into Big Cottonwood Canyon on one side and views into Park City on the other. And it's not a real technical ride, just a fun, fast ride. And a ride I'd probably done 50 plus times.
Is that the ride that has the spine at the very top? It's called the spine.
They call it Puke Hill. So yes, everybody calls it Puke Hill. So you got to get up one really steep hill.
Yes.
And you got to be spinning pretty quick to get up that. And then once you're to the top of that, it just kind of goes up and down over a number of miles. And then, when you come to a lake, really beautiful lake, and then there is a really technical spine right there.
Yes.
That's not where I wrecked. From there, you can go into Mill Creek Canyon, or you can head down the Mill D Trail into Big Cottonwood Canyon. And that day, we had decided we were going to go into the Mill D Canyon. We started to descend that down that side, and we're headed down the hill. I got down to about a mile from
And before you go to that mile point,
yeah.
Christian, your level of riding skill is what? Like, you ride enough to where you're pretty much an advanced mountain bike rider, aren't you?
Yeah. I was probably riding 4 days a week, and I would ride that, you know, spring. I'd take a little break to do some fly fishing through the start of the summer and then ride late summer into fall. So I was probably riding 40 to 50 days easily through.
Yeah. Those, so you're an advanced rider on a very.
Was riding. Yeah. I would ride fairly fast. Every time when I tell people what happened, most of them, I ran into somebody I knew from San Francisco the other day. I lived a while in San Francisco, and he said, well, he hadn't seen me in 20 years. He said, really, I'm not surprised you broke your neck.
Seriously.
So, I don't know what level of rider I am, but if that says something.
For sure. Yeah, that's firsthand reputation. Okay, let's go back to that mile point then.
Yeah, so I stopped to wait for Matt. I was with my friend, and he didn't show up. So I decided I better ride back up the hill and see what happened. And I rode back up. Found Matt. He had a flat tire.
Mm.
So we stopped and changed his tire. He was about halfway through the process, changed his tire. We made plans to hit Porcupine Grill for some nachos and a drink on the way home. And I left and took off down. And he was coming shortly behind me as he wrapped up.
So you were riding alone.
Yep. I was on my own now. And we kind of, as you're mountain biking, you might be, you know, a quarter of a mile ahead of your partner, or sometimes you're right together. But on this, I had taken off. He was still wrapping up, getting his stuff together. And I took off. And that's really the last thing I remember. I don't know how I wrecked. We pieced the pieces back together now. But the last thing I remember was being with Matt and fixing his tire. The next thing I remember is coming to, and Matt was doing mouth-to-mouth on me as I was struggling to breathe. But what happened is I hit a tree, and I hit it with my forehead. And when I hit it was a massive tree just off the just off the trail. I don't know what happened or how I did it, but somehow I got tied up. It wasn't real technical, so I have a feeling I was going pretty fast. I would guess in the 20 to 25 mile an hour range.
Okay.
I hit that with my forehead, and when I hit it with my forehead, it broke my neck in three places.
Oh.
And I dislocated my second vertebrae. So when that happened, it pinched my spinal cord, and I was completely paralyzed. And the C2 break, it's right below your skull. So the vertebrae, your C1, just almost right up into your skull. C2 is just below your skull. When that broke, it dislodged and pinched my spinal cord, and that paralyzed me. They call it the hanging break. When they would hang people, it wouldn't suffocate them. It would actually break their C2. And when you do that, that is above where the sensors come off to go to your diaphragm. So in essence,
controls your breathing. You. Yes. Yeah.
So that's what happened to me. I was suffocating there on the trail because my brake was so high. I was completely paralyzed that my diaphragm wasn't even working. It had knocked me out, so I was unconscious and laying on the trail. When Matt got to me, fortunately, he wasn't too far behind me, or I wouldn't be here talking to
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was fortunate Matt was close behind. When he came up, he saw me. I still had one clip in my pedal and my bike laying across, and he thought I was just playing a joke on him, and then pretty quickly realized that I was unconscious and not breathing. I was extremely fortunate, and Matt went to Stanford to do his undergraduate and then decided to be a ski bum for a year and work as a ski patroller.
So he was an EMT. Area.
So he had training.
Yes.
And his training and his foresight really saved my life, or at least gave me the quality of the life I have. As he tried to figure out what to do, he decided not to do chest compressions on me, which turned out to be a really big deal because my neck was broken. And if he would have started doing chest compressions on me, he most likely would have caused further damage to my spinal cord. Instead, he decided just to do rescue breathing. And as he breathed for me, in time, I came to. And once I came to, we were able to start talking a little bit. I still couldn't breathe. He'd have to give me a breath, and then we could talk a little bit, and then I'd start to suffocate, and then he'd give me a breath, and we could communicate a little bit. So that allowed us to kind of piece what was going together, that I was couldn't move anything. Our other problem is we didn't have a cell phone, and we had started the ride at about 5 p.m. at night, just after work.
So it was getting dark. Yeah.
And we were there with no cell phone.
No cell phone.
Yeah. No.
Well, I've wrecked on that trail. I've wrecked and had a pretty nasty wreck myself and was injured. And we had cells, but we didn't have any cell space. We couldn't reach out. And so I had to just get pedaled out. That was a bummer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It nice to have to be able to call for help.
My gosh, yes. So when you're laying there and you know that you're paralyzed, you know you hurt really bad, and you're getting a rescue breath by a friend giving you enough oxygen to take a, you know, to say something small and communicate, was there a sense of panic setting in, you know, that you were afraid?
You know, it's a great question, Bob. And actually there really wasn't. There was for a moment, and then Matt just started to be like, hey, we'll get this figured out. And that calmed me down just enough to say, okay, we're in a tough spot here. And I thought to myself, I'm going to fight like mad to get out of here. And we're going to do everything we can to get out of here. And if we don't, that's okay. And it was interesting how much peace there was, just realizing, you know what? That's okay. Either way, we're going to fight like mad. We're going to do everything we can. But yeah. Either way, this will be just fine. So I never felt it right at the start when I started to realize I couldn't move.
Yes.
But I was so injured and kind of in so much pain, that kind of quickly went away, and we just started to problem solve and think about how we could get through the moment.
Yeah. Oh, that's intense. I mean, I can't hardly breathe right now thinking about it and hearing you talk about this. It's intense. Yeah. So once you guys, you decided that, you know, you really had a serious problem, you needed to get the heck out of there. What next?
Yeah. So as you're, at the bottom of that trail, as fortune would have it, across the canyon, there's a handful of cabins. They're just kind of summertime cabins. There's a few of them. Matt started to yell for help, and someone in those cabins heard him yelling, actually ran in, grabbed his cell phone, and started to make the trek down to us. There's no trail. You just kind of had to bushwhack through the trees and so forth. And he was able to get up to us and had a cell phone. So once he got to us, we were close enough to the canyon that we could get reception.
Lucky.
We got on with 911. Matt was able to talk to them, tell them what was going on, that I was paralyzed, that, what the situation was,
yeah.
And that I had some blood coming out of my my mouth and different things like that. So we kind of understand the gravity of the situation, where we were. He was able to communicate where we were, and then the battery went dead.
Oh my gosh! And, it was just enough in that phone to get that message through.
And so we got enough juice to get the message through, and them to understand kind of where we were. And then we started just working on keeping me
alive.
And
how long did that take? How long did that go on?
Yeah, it's hard to remember now all the timing. I think one of the big things that really helped our situation is I had a thought that I needed to be moved. I was kind of on my side with my head kind of up on the high side of the trail, and my legs kind of down on the low side of the trail, and I was really uncomfortable. And I said, Matt, we got to get me on my back. And of course, they're really nervous to move me in any way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Knowing I'm paralyzed, and now we've pretty much assessed, got a good idea what's going on. But I said, you got to move me onto my back. And so the gentleman that was there and Matt rolled me over. They stabilized my neck as best they could and rolled me onto my back. When we did that, I stopped needing rescue breaths.
Hmm.
What I'm pretty confident happened is we were able to take some pressure off the spinal cord.
I see.
And when that pressure removed, it was able to let the signals come through enough to get to my diaphragm. I'm still completely paralyzed, but I was able to breathe on my own. It was pretty labored, and I really had to think about the breathing.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen naturally, but mm-hmm. if I really focused on my breathing, I was able to breathe now without getting rescue breaths. So that seemed like it bought us some time to allow the rescuers to get there. It wasn't too long after Matt's phone call that we could hear the helicopter above us. And they couldn't see us. We were in too thick of a canopy of trees to get to us.
Oh.
But it was nice to know at least we had help was there. I was pretty surprised how quickly the helicopter did get there after the call.
Yeah.
So they were there. They landed on the Big Cottonwood Canyon road. They had already called search and rescue. And search and rescue put together a team to get up the trail and get me off and down to the helicopter.
Oh my gosh!
Oh,
so you got into the helicopter and then they just took you right to what hospital?
Yeah, we flew down to IMC in Murray. So it was about a 5-minute flight. It's probably about, it was 25 miles away from where we were.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember one. I was kind of complaining to Matt, man, I'm really struggling to breathe. He's like, just keep breathing, man. Just keep breathing. Once they get there, they'll have oxygen and things will be so much better.
Yes.
And when they put me on oxygen, things weren't that much better, but I appreciate Matt for trying to find every little thing.
Oh my gosh.
Just do this. And because if you can get here, things will get better. And, there is something to be said.
He was your beacon of hope that day.
Each step is just like, okay, if we can just get to the helicopter, then we can get to the hospital. And if we can get to the hospital, then they can start to figure out what's going on.
For sure.
So there is just this path of you just got to figure out what the next step is and let's get there. And then we'll move on to the next.
Otherwise, it might be just too overwhelming. Just looking at the entire situation you have ahead of you all in one piece. It just may be too overwhelming.
Yeah. You're just processing. How do I get to the next place? And hopefully at the next place, they've got ideas on what to do next.
Yeah,
we got to the hospital, quick helicopter ride. I guess as I was, I don't remember all the facts, but as we were coming in, by now, as we're coming into the to land, the nurse was talking to me and just reassuring me, "You're almost there. They'll get you some help. We're going to get you out of here." And I made a comment to her. I just said, "Well, whatever happens, I'll make the best of this." And she thought that was the oddest comment. She came and visited me in my hospital room about 6 weeks later, and she's like, "No one ever says that."
Yeah, seriously.
I thought that was so
odd. You had the best attitude, Christian. Jeez.
She came and visited and said, "Yeah, we figured you'd be okay, because nobody ever says that when we're just about to land."
Yeah. Whatever comes out of this, we'll just deal with it. It's all good. Man, so, I love that.
But that might have been a high point before many challenges that were yet to be faced.
Right. Okay, so once you get to the hospital, they start taking care of you immediately. And at this point, doing the math back 12 years ago, you said you've been married the last 8 years with your wife. So this is back when you're single and you were active, just doing your thing as a single guy. And so did they notify your parents right away?
I was married. I actually got divorced after my accident. So I was married when the accident happened and got divorced after the accident. So,
okay.
He tried to get a ride on the helicopter. They wouldn't let him in. And so he had to drive down, but I gave him a chance to call my brother. He didn't dare call my wife. He called my brother, and my brother was able to start getting family notified of the situation. Matt drove down to my home and notified Jesse of what was going on. So when he showed up to the door, she knew immediately something was up at 10:30 at night when he got there, and I wasn't in tow. So family and all of my family all ended up down in the hospital. And I've joked, you don't have to wait at all. If you show up in and you're paralyzed to the emergency room, there's no waiting. They get you right in. They get all the best doctors.
You had VIP status that day.
So we had lots of incredibly smart people starting to work on the problem and figure out what was going on. They do a lot of things different today. We've learned from spinal cord injuries that you need to get the pressure off the spinal cord as fast as you can. So they get steroids in you, they get pictures done so they can tell. One of the first steps is they put you in a halo. They're just trying to get the pressure off your spinal cord and see if any sensation, any movement returns. So the halo, they put screws into your skull. So they put a kind of a steel halo around you, and they use four steel screws to just put that into your skull. And then they have bars that come down off the halo and mount onto a chest plate that they put around your body. And what they're hoping will happen is when they get your spine back into the right place, that you'll start to have some movement. So they did this with me. I had a friend from a number of years ago who had gone through this, so I kind of knew what was going to happen to me and how this halo process was. They just use literally a DeWalt screwdriver to put those bolts into your head.
Yeah, it's just fresh from Home Depot.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It just probably cost
100x
that.
So. Exactly. Yeah.
And the surgeons got that on me, and then they started to ask some questions to me. "Hey, Christian, can you lift your right knee? We need you to lift your right knee up." And so I'd go, "Yeah, sure." And then I'm laying him in the bed, and they've just got me in this halo now. And then they say, "Hey, Christian, can you do your left knee now? Why don't you go ahead and lift your left knee up?" And he goes back, "Okay, right knee, go ahead and lift your right knee up." He says, "Christian, do you hear me? Can you understand what I'm saying to you? Just lift your right knee." I said, "I am lifting my right knee."
So you had the sensation that you were doing it, but it was not happening?
Yeah. And I could see the expression in everybody's face when I said that, and it became pretty evident that
you were paralyzed.
There was no movement whatsoever.
Oh my gosh. So at that point, the diagnosis was that you were going to be paralyzed from the neck down.
So I had no movement. There was nothing was moving, hands, arms, nothing. I was completely paralyzed from just below my my skull. At this point, my breathing was really starting to deteriorate again, too. I was really struggling to breathe again. So they made a decision to intubate me, and that sent me to the intensive care unit. They got me intubated and breathing on machinery, and that started a 2-week process in the intensive care unit until they could get me breathing again on my own.
Were you conscious during that time, did they have you sedated to where you're pretty much unconscious?
I thought I was pretty conscious, but in retrospect, when I went back down to the room where I was at and realized, oh, there was a huge window in there. I had no idea it was over the window. So I'm not sure I was too with it. I thought I was comprehending most of what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I was pretty heavily sedated. I definitely remember a lot of stuff, and there were a lot of people that wanted to come visit me, so they come in. I couldn't talk, but we came up with a blinking system where one was yes and two blinks was no, so folks could do. I had no feeling, and they did have me on painkillers, which makes your head itch. So I also remember I wanted anybody to like rub my head.
Oh, yeah. Just give you some relief.
Only place I had any feeling or any sensations. Huh. We got through.
Okay. Let's start again, just really quick. Just the recording stopped for just a second. Let's back up to the point where, the intubation piece, you had a trach, you still couldn't talk. Let's catch up to that point.
Yeah. So I was a couple of weeks intubated, no talking during any of that, that time. Then they put me on a trach, and then it was another 2 to 3 weeks. I was a day or two in the intensive care unit on the trach, and then they moved me up to a physical rehabilitation floor, where I'd spend the next couple of months, living and doing, but I was, I think another 2 to 3 weeks. So I might've been about a month to 5 weeks where, you know, I couldn't talk. I do remember they.
How hard they had, was that for you not to talk?
Yeah, and they had a little device eventually that they put on the trach that allowed me to kind of talk through.
Oh my gosh, like Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Just like Darth Vader or something like that. So that was nice. I remember thinking it was, you know, talking through blinks. And see, I couldn't write or do anything because I was completely paralyzed.
Right.
So really, the only way I could communicate was through blinks. So, you know, trying to get everyone to, you know, if you had an itch on your face, it was pretty hard. You just were living with that itch for the most part.
Oh, my gosh, that's got to be so hard.
So once I was talking, that certainly opened up. That made things a lot nicer.
Did they give you much hope of recovery with the diagnosis at that point, Christian, after you... It had been, you know, 5 weeks to month, 2 months. Did they give you much hope that you would improve?
You know, they've learned over time. You know, you hear stories of people getting paralyzed 20, 30 years ago, and they were like, oh, you won't walk again. They've learned not to say that. So the doctors weren't saying that. The doctors are pretty good about saying, we don't know. And when I got moved from the intensive care unit up to the physical therapy unit where I start to try and get better, they kind of go through a little psych evaluation and kind of walk you through how your living's going to be. And there was a counselor that did that. And she came to me and said, you know what? I've been here and I forget how long, and I wish I could remember her name, but she said, I've been doing this a long time, and frankly, nobody knows how you're going to turn out or what your outcome's going to be. Mm-hmm. But over the many years that I've been doing this, I can guarantee you, if you'll listen to your therapist and do what they ask you to do and have a good attitude, I can guarantee you're going to have a better outcome than if you would otherwise. So I was like, well, I can do that. How hard can it be?
Yeah.
Good attitude. And I'm going to listen and do everything my therapist said. I'm like, I'm going to do everything they did, and I'm going to do it even more.
Absolutely.
And so I was just like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to get back, but that's what I'm going to do. I'm taking her advice. I'm going to have the best attitude I can possibly have. And I'm going to focus on doing everything they asked me to do. So nobody really knew. My doctors were good about that. We're like, we don't know. You may walk out of here. You may never walk again. We just don't know. Mm-hmm. And so we just got to start retraining your neurological system and seeing what function we can get back.
And with your attitude, it was so strong. Did you feel like you really were going to get better? and you were going to walk out of there at some point and whip this thing?
I can't remember thinking that, like, oh yeah, I'm going to walk again. I just remember thinking, I'm just going to do everything I can.
Yeah.
And
let be what it's going to be.
Yep. And what happens, happens. I'm just going to do everything I can. I actually started to walk again fairly soon. I was probably about a month or maybe even 6 weeks post-accident when I was able to take my first steps without... my therapists were holding a gait belt, so they'd have a special belt in case I collapsed.
Yes.
But I was able to take steps and walk a little bit.
And support your own weight?
Yep. What I didn't have was my arms and hands really weren't working. So I started walking much sooner and didn't have any use of my arms and hands. In fact, I remember a point in time where in the hospital, though, where I was thinking, I really wish I was in a wheelchair and I could use my hands and my arms. And it's like, what good's walking going to me if I can't use my hands and arms?
Yeah.
So my walking started to come back a little sooner, but took quite a while. I think I was probably 3 months in before I could actually feed myself.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's just intense. So what really kind of got you through? You know, at this point, that what's your mental state? What's your mental outlook? And what got you through at this point in your recovery?
You know, I really do think it was that advice. A couple of things. And what I realized when I was in the hospital is somebody's always got it worse than you. And no matter how bad you might have it, you know, there was a lady in there with a couple of people with strokes. And I mean, it's not very hard. And there was a high school girl in there that was paralyzed. And, you know, I'm thinking, man, high school and you're paralyzed. So I think one of the things that helped me was her advice, just keep a positive attitude. And mm-hmm. It's amazing when you start looking to try and make the life of someone else better, which I had learned this lesson earlier in my life. If you can help somebody else, you'll just feel better yourself. So that was another thing I started to focus on is what can I do? What can I do for these other folks that are in here? And it's amazing how you start to be grateful for your own situation and what you're getting back. And I think that was a big help to me. Just being surrounded by other people, being able to help each other and work as a group was a big part of my recovery, not only in the hospital, but even once I left the hospital, being in other circles where people had been through this before and they could shed light on what you might be looking into and what challenges you're going to have. And mm-hmm. I think those interactions and those connections and the way we could give something I might say to someone else lends value on what they may give to me, I think was
just that human connection.
Yeah. Big part of the recovery.
That's so interesting because I've been up to the Burns Center before and they have a lot of patients that are very connected with each other in one big room receiving therapy. And for them to look out and see each other, they can always see a person that's in worse shape than them. And it seems to give them a lot of strength. And I think they've really kind of figured that out on the rehab side that people need to see people. That you can't just rehab somebody in a room by themselves with no one around and no external stimuli. You know, that when you see other people going through hard things, that it really kind of gives you strength that you can endure it too. And you're saying that right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's critical. We're just meant to be around other people, and in our biggest challenges, that's probably even more important. Those connections we have, you know, one of the things my family, I was in the hospital for 2.5 months and
yeah.
couldn't do the simplest of things. If I needed to brush my teeth or scratch my head or so forth, there was no way to do that. So my family committed that they would have someone with me 24/7. And, you know, they're all working and doing different things, but they made a commitment that someone was going to be there. So they kind of broke up the time, and my father would come in the morning and spend time when I was doing therapy. My father-in-law would come in the afternoon. My wife would come in the early evening. And then friends and all my siblings and different people would just divide up my aunts and uncles, and different folks would divide up the night. And
how impressive is that?
Yeah,
that's your support team.
24/7.
And did that go on for a long time?
2.5 months, the whole time I was in the hospital.
That's so cool.
Right at the very end, I think there were a couple of nights where I was gaining enough independence that I could call and get some help from the nurses and some things like that. But otherwise, they were with me that entire time.
You know, I was going to ask you if there's anyone out there that you have thanks for. And it sounds to me like there's a group out there, a sport team, that you would be thankful for.
Definitely. I mean, just, yeah, I can think my whole family, you know, my mother-in-law and father-in-law and wife at the time, and just a whole network of different people that were so involved, in addition to all the therapists and doctors. And, you know, you think back, Matt, I bet the rescue crew that came and got me, the helicopter crew that came and got me, I've thought about it. And then physical therapy, post-physical therapy, all the individuals, I'm guessing there were hundreds of people that have had responsibility for my recovery.
That's incredible.
Pretty remarkable. Yeah,
it really
just
is.
One individual, yeah. And it probably took a few hundred people in the end for me to recover.
Gosh.
And all the different therapists, physical therapists and occupational therapists and various doctors and surgeons and, yeah. And yeah. The list goes on and on and on, right?
Well, so. And I bet they're so happy, you know, to see where you're at today. And we'll get to that in just a second about where you're at in looking at you. I actually have you in my office here to do this interview, and you walked in. I mean, you were paralyzed from neck down, and today I see you, and I've seen you in recent past, and you stand up, walk, talk, drive a truck, everything. And so that's just mind blowing to me that you went from that horrible condition to where you're at today. So how are you feeling today as compared to back then when you were going through this, you know, just with a few years behind you? How are you feeling today?
Yeah. And you know, you're right. I can walk. I really can do almost anything. I walk different. So if you see me, you can't quite tell what's wrong. You're like, oh man, he is not walking right. I've had a couple of times where I've gone into the, into a convenience store and they're like, sir, are you sure you're okay to drive? And I'll be like, no, I'm just paralyzed. No big deal.
So, you know what, Christian? So when you say that, you've been paralyzed, what is the condition of paralysis in your body today?
Yeah. So I'm still paralyzed. That's what you see in my hands. I actually don't have much sensation, so I can't feel temperature very well. I can tell if I were to put my hand in my pocket, I might be able to tell I'm touching something, but I couldn't tell if it's my keys or my wallet or any. I don't have enough sensation to see that. So I know I'm mm-hmm. touching something. I would describe it as if you've ever fallen asleep on your arm,
oh, yeah.
and you get that tingling sensation that comes up, and that's what I have through my entire body. So I kind of have that tingling sensation if your arm or leg falls asleep. That's going on in my body below my injury all the time. And I have just a very numbed sensation. You know, my dexterity and kind of everything's impacted. Pretty much everything doesn't work quite the way it once did, but it works.
It works.
So,
I mean, yes,
you take
you're
what you
6'4" and you are a tall, strong man that just walked in to my house, and it just is super cool.
Yeah. And
what about your balance? You know, do you have pretty good balance, or is that?
No, I don't have very good balance at all, but I get by. Hold railings are really important, and I haven't, you know, I don't use a cane for the most part. I do if I'm going to be, I like to fly fish. So if I'm going to go fly fishing, I use walking stick. You know, I take a tumble probably 2-3 times a year. I was just in, I don't know if you can see on my head, I've kind of got some dings.
Yeah,
on
you
the top
do.
Of my head. There's a place downtown, the Alta Club, but doesn't have the best railing system and so forth. So I took a tumble down the stairs.
Oh no!
A couple of weeks ago. So I, you know, some of that's just the adventure of being paralyzed. But I'll take it to not being able to
walk. Oh yeah,
and
for sure,
so forth. So no, my balance is poor, but I can stay balanced. I've just get creative on ways to do things different. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm going to be on uneven ground, I take a walking stick. I love to fly fish, do that all over the world. And I've been all over the world post accident, and I'll just, I'll find some way. If I'm going to stand on the bow of a boat, I'll put a cooler up there. I make sure they have a leaning bar or something. So you just get a little creative.
So you don't put on waders and go out in the stream. That's just too slippery and too, I mean, that would be dangerous for you to go out into the stream.
I do. See, I'm a slow learner, Bob. So,
so you've tried that and it's not been good.
Well, I can do it with a walking stick and I'm very careful on where I go. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, I will go out and wade and I don't get deep into a river in fast moving water, but I'll get around and with a walking stick and going slow, I can do it. And I've got various boats that I kind of use and I can fish small streams and big streams. So I've just found things to do and different ways to do it. And I decided I wanted to get my pilot's license. So I got a pilot's license post accident. I fly and fly my family all over. And we've been all over the place flying around and going different places, flying. So I've just found new things to do and new ways to do it. I still ride a bike. Electric bikes have been fabulous. So, I can get on electric bike and do pretty well. Yeah, so by and large, I've been able to
continue on with life.
Yeah, find great things to do. I always say it's a great day and age to be a quadriplegic.
Thank goodness it wasn't just a few years before that, or else you seriously could be, in a bed, just seeing life pass you by. But you are able to, with medical science, able to function at the level that you do, and you're finding life still going forward. And I my heart goes out to you. That's so admirable. It's so cool that you're doing that. You're not letting life pass you by. You're taking it by the horns and enjoying it.
And that is a credit to a lot of people, right? It's, I've had a little bit to do with it. And as we mentioned, I'm just convinced we just don't go through this life on our own. Sometimes we have help to give and other times we need help. And there's just various times in our life and those relationships and people are there and they can help us at certain times. Well, and that's what allowed me to get through it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that special person in your life with Jody. What kind of a partner in life is she with by your side?
She has to put up with me, Bob. So she's amazing.
I agree.
You know her. She has ran the HR departments for a number of different companies, some technology companies and manufacturers and different. She's led and been the top HR person for a number of different companies. And she's learned a lot of good communication skills and patience skills. So she can deal
You're with a me. Project for
yeah,
her.
I am a project for everyone. And she takes it with grace and she's an amazing mom. And it's just does a great job with our kids and with me and puts up with me. And some of the I've found in my life, actually, the big challenges sometimes are a little bit easier to deal with than some of the day-to-day challenges. Mm-hmm. And some of the day-to-day challenges can be more frustrating. And that's your wife, she just gets a view into that no one else sees.
Oh, for sure.
Bless her heart, she puts up with it and she helps me and she's always there to do what it takes. And I can't do everything. So she has...
You guys work as a team.
Yeah. She does a lot. There's just things that, because of my paralysis, I just can't do very well. So, she's hauling boxes up and down the stairs because I'm just trying to get up and down the stairs without falling.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just like leave the box alone. Just don't fall.
Yeah.
Well, that's just impressive. I think people don't mind also reaching out and helping people that help themselves. You've just done every single thing you possibly can to help yourself. And other people see the slight challenge that you might have where you can't get something done and they just want to easily jump in and help you out because you do so much yourself. And so, I don't know, it's just a cool thing to see.
And I see that all the time. People are incredible and, I witness that all the time because I do walk funny and they can tell something's up. There are a lot of people. It's amazing. Every day people are trying to help me and do different things.
But not do too much for you because I imagine you're like, I got this. Honestly, I know you want to help me walk along, but I got this. I can do this. So
it's little things like they'll hold the door, right? Someone will see that he's just not walking. And they'll just wait and hold the door.
Yeah.
But, it is those little things that just is a testament to how great people are.
For sure. It's cool. Humanity still is out there in a good way. And I have a question as far as greatest takeaway from this, Christian. What kind of major lessons have you learned from this that you take away?
Oh, there's been a lot of lessons. But I do think probably go back to what we've already talked about. The biggest to me is when we do have these challenges, we do have the opportunity to decide and choose kind of how we're going to respond to it. Mm-hmm. And we get thrown into a ton of different situations, right? And it is amazing the power we have just to choose. And we can choose, we can't choose what we get thrown into and what challenges we're going to have, but we can choose how we respond to that challenge. And to your point, I think when we demonstrate that we're going to choose a positive way to get through the challenge, then others ride to the occasion and find ways to help us. So I think lessons for me that I maybe knew before, but it's just getting confirmed time and time again, is if we do make choices, positive, good choices, it just, people step up, they help us. And I think service and helping, it was just a testament. There's no way I'd be here if it weren't for the service and help of so many people. And so I just say attitude and service and helping one another is just the time-tested lessons that have just further been ingrown into me. I knew those things, and I've just seen it time and time again through my own experiences of how important those are.
That's so cool. And you know what, going back to the very beginning when you were talking about your accident, is that sometimes you just have to look at the very next close tiny thing that you can achieve, that you can get through to get to the next little stepping stone. Because if you look at the grand picture, it may absolutely sink you. But you took little teeny bites at this thing at a time. You and Matt, in that moment. And I think that's incredible.
Yeah, how do you eat an elephant, huh?
One bite at a time. Yeah, and you definitely had an elephant situation, that's for sure.
You know, you bring that up, but you're spot on. And I remember a situation where, in the process, one of my therapists was, we're trying to get my hands to work. And she was just taking my thumb, and she would lift my thumb up and she would push my thumb back down. She would lift my thumb up and then she'd push my thumb back down. She's like, okay, now Christian, you go. And my thumb moved. If it was an eighth of an inch, I'd be amazed. And everybody cheered. I had a couple of my family members that were like, oh, that was such a big deal. I just moved my thumb an eighth of an inch.
Yeah. An ant can do more than that.
Yeah. But now I can move my thumb, right?
Right.
So it really is. You know, if we just look, whatever we do that's difficult and hard, right? We start at some point and start to do what we can. And it's pretty amazing what we can do when we just stick with it.
Oh, for sure. It's so for sure. Hey, you know what? If you were to talk to your younger Christian, if you were to kind of look back in time and talk to a Christian deputy that's like a teenager, what would you tell your younger self?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It is tough.
You know, I don't know, Bob. I don't feel like I have many regrets. And I honestly feel like the regrets I have are more the things I didn't do.
Yeah.
Way more than the things I did do. Even when I made mistakes, it's kind of been the things that the advantages or the opportunities that I didn't take advantage of have been way more regretful to me than the things I did and maybe screwed up. Mm-hmm. So it might just be when it's there, when the opportunity is there and you feel good about it, go for it.
Good.
There's there's fear and you got to listen to some of those things. But I think often we let fear get in the way so many times instead of just going after something that we want. So I think I'd recommend don't worry about the fear. When some opportunity presents itself, go for it.
Awesome.
And that's probably been my biggest thing.
I love it. Would you change anything?
You know, I miss my old body. There's no doubt about it. I miss skiing and kites. I did so many
things,
with my body. And there's no doubt I miss my old body. I would love to be able to run and jump and have that old body, no doubt. But I wouldn't do it at the expense of losing the experiences I've had. And, you know, those lessons you learn through hardship or from challenge is way more important. And I think if someone came to me and said, hey, I can give you back your own body, but I'm going to take away all that memory. And I don't think I could do that. So
I believe that. Yep. I believe it. Yeah. You've gained, you may have lost some dexterity and some flexibility and things like that, but buddy, you gained a lot of strength, you know, that some people will never ever see in their life. So, you know, and you've been able to pass it on and help other people. In closing, final thoughts, anything you'd like to share?
No,
before we go,
I just appreciate what you're doing, Bob, and trying to get good messages out. And, it's been great to catch up with you and spend
super
some time
great.
And yeah, appreciate the time to catch up with you. And,
you bet.
It's always, yeah.
It's a pleasure to have you. Yeah. It's a pleasure to have you and witness your strength. You're a good man, Christian Deputy. You know, I wish you the very best as you go forward and continue to recuperate. But also, you've come so far. I just look forward to, you know, people being able to take advantage of the wonderful strength that you've got and motivation, you know, that people going through hard things, they can get through it. If they just please keep a good attitude and look for the best, and, you know, as you said to that helicopter nurse, you know, that, hey, you know what, whatever comes out of this, you know, I'm good with that. And just like, I love that attitude.
Well, thanks, cool. Bob. And you're a great, you know, again, I'll thank you. I think it's spectacular what you're doing here and trying to get good messages out. And, I couldn't agree more. Ah. It's amazing what we can overcome.
You got it, buddy. Well, continue to take good care of yourself. Thank you for being here with me. I really, really appreciate it and love you a lot. So you take care of yourself. And, thank you for taking the time of reflection to let us share in your experience. Becoming a part of your journey ultimately impacts ours. So until we see each other again, stay alive to tell about it, buddy.
Thanks.